This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Prince of Queens. He has a alt-left YouTube channel, Prince of Queens. It's a great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. This is one of my first interviews. We're still in the first, let's say, five interviews that I've had. So it's a wonderful that you guys have invited me. I am certainly by no means exactly a big deal. So,
and I'm also joined here with Pill Eater and Bay Area Guy.
Hi, Robert.
It's great to be on as always, Robert.
Oh. It's good.
And when I say I'm not a big deal, it's not that I don't have interesting things to say. It's just that most people don't know who I am yet. So that's what I mean. I am a fucking big deal. God damn it. I'm just underexposed. So.
I think it was funny. I actually didn't know who you were until Robert told me about you, and I actually started to watch your videos. And then a few days ago, you had the 3,000 sub show, and you were playing this game called Quips, and I actually was on it for like one or two rounds, and I thought it was interesting. Yeah. It's very commutative like that. I don't know that you're getting people like everyone's hanging out together with you. I thought that was really cool.
It's fun. No, it's totally a fun thing to do. A lot of YouTubers do it. It's generally, I would say, YouTubers in sort of the anti-SJW sphere, the skeptic, you know, like, pick everything apart. Because Quiplash is a very politically incorrect game. Like, the format of the game is that you're given a certain amount of time to answer questions, and then people vote on which answer is the best out of the available answers that are both written by people. So it becomes basically a pissing contest of who can be the most offensive, is how it works.
My answers were bad. They were just like David Duke, Zog, Harry Potter gets Asian pussy, something really silly like that, but I don't know.
My most common answer is anything with Justin Trudeau. That's always funny to me for some reason, but it doesn't always translate that way. If I don't know what to say, if all else fails, Justin Trudeau is usually kind of funny.
I think the game's harder than Cards Against Humanity because everyone votes to multiple choices, and this is like literally a 50-50, and it's like it's either that or this. I don't know. I find that quite harder. But I think it's also funny too. I also understand that you know of Joshua David McKenney, which we actually had on the show a week or two ago. And to be about his dolls.
Yeah, you guys, somehow we figured that out. I'm not really sure. I know Joshua quite well, but not for a long time. He was a friend of mine in college. We lived in the same dorm together freshman year. And it was a very small dorm. There was not probably more than 50 students that lived in it in Manhattan. And so he was a friend of mine, and we remained friends all through college. And he was always very talented. I mean, he went to Parsons School of Design, and Parsons is a really, really good design school. So basically everybody who goes there is quite talented at what they do. And I don't really remember exactly. I think he was studying fashion illustration. Mm-hmm. The doll thing.
Did you also study a fashion?
No, I studied, I went to the liberal arts division, and I studied various, you know, liberal arts, you take all sorts of different types of classes, but I specialized in writing and theater. So my actual degree was in playwriting, and have been doing, you know, playwriting and theatrical type things for many, many years. So it's, doing YouTube has come very... I wouldn't say naturally. It's more like I have been groomed to be a YouTuber for a very long time. Because a lot of people are like, "Holy shit, why don't you have more subscribers?" And I'm like, "Well, I've only really been making videos since July." And they're like, "Really? You're so good at it." And it's like, "Well, yeah, I'm a fucking playwright. It's not like this just happened, you know?" Like,
I asked Device also how to make thumbnails. I'm trying to make YouTube videos too. I just don't know how to make the thumbnails. And you told me all you have to do is download pictures and then use the Illustrator and Mac. I'm like, "What?" And I just recently found out about it.
Yeah, well, that's not my area of expertise at all. Like, I'm not really good with the visual ends. Like, all I do with my videos is I write my scripts entirely ahead of time. I have a little process where I wake up, I go on the internet, see what people are talking about, see what interests me. If something, you know, really outstanding happens that I need to talk about, like, do you guys know about the whole Jordan B. Peterson debacle?
No.
No.
He's the guy, he's a professor in Canada who is, he is a, I think, a behavioral psychologist, and he has tenure at the University of Toronto. And he has studied authoritarianism, and he's really good at relating authoritarianism to psychology, like what types of people are susceptible to authoritarian types of thinking, and how do authoritarian governments come to be, and like how does their propaganda originate, and how is it successful, you know, that kind of thing.
Like personality types, does this like kind of rule? I don't know if you're familiar with this, but there's like the Myers-Briggs personality types.
Yeah, I don't know if it's related to that. I just think that he's saying more like, you know, he had a video about, you know, social justice warriors, and he views that there's sort of two types of social justice warrior. There's the ones that are full blown authoritarians, and they don't necessarily know it, but they're the full blown cry bullies, like the people who will, you know, like they will disrupt an entire class, not lecture, but even a whole semester, and get the professor in trouble because he said something triggering or whatever, and they will call the dean. They'll call the dean, and they think that that's perfectly acceptable. And then and they'll say, well, yeah, because I was raped, and I'm a person. I'm a queer woman of color, and nobody listens to queer women of color. And no. You know, those type of people. And those are the full blown authoritarians. They literally think that the only way to fix their problem is to have somebody with authority intervene, you know, and that's the way they think. And then the majority of SJWs are more of the authoritarian sympathizers. They believe in the idea that that this person is as distressed as they claim to be, and that they basically enable this person. They say, well, yeah, you know, you should give trigger warnings. This person is a poor queer woman of color. I have sympathy for her. But they don't realize that when they're enabling her, they are enabling authoritarianism. So he talks about he talks about those kind of distinct psychological differences in the crowds that enable authoritarian things to happen. So he ran into he's probably still going through trouble in Toronto. I believe it's going to be a state law, but it might be a law for all of Canada. They're trying to include in some sort of law, it's called Bill C-16. Basically, long story short, what he has an objection to is they're trying to include transgender pronouning into discrimination, so that if somebody was a professor and they forget to refer to their students as the correct pronoun, they could get in trouble with the dean. And it's not just for transgender people, it's for all of the, you know, 35 registered genders in Canada. So that includes, you know, like gender neutral pronouns and all that kind of weird shit. And he's realizing that it's, well, first of all, he has an objection to it because of it's the fact that these type of things don't actually help transgender people. Like,
and it's not even practical to implement, because even if someone wants to do it, they're gonna forget.
It's basically, I mean, honestly, he views it as kind of a shoehorn for authoritarianism and speech codes, freedom of speech violations. It's a way to get people in trouble for wrong think, you know. And that's what he's viewing this as, like sort of the early sign of an erosion of free speech in Canada. So he's saying that he's not going to respect this law, and if they fire him, they fire him, and if they take him to jail, he's going to go on a hunger strike. So I've made a video about him. You know, that was a current events issue I felt very strongly about speaking about, especially because, you know, I'm gay, and I'm not just gay. I have a very long history of being a part of the queer community, mm-hmm. which was spawned in feminist theory and has now been completely monopolized by fourth wave intersectional feminist social
justice. What decade did you get involved with the queer movement?
When?
Yeah, like around what era?
1996, when I came out. I was actually already doing some queer activism before I came out. And then I came out and I was like 14. And most of the people I knew were lesbians. And I don't know. I mean, they were young, though. They were like my age, you know. So they were still cool. They were like kids, you know. But they were definitely getting a lot of hand-me-down cues from feminist theory. I don't know how many of them were actually reading it. But they ultimately, a lot of what we were doing was sort of coming from slightly feminist things, except for this was still, you know, this was 1996. So AIDS was still a thing. And also feminists weren't nearly, didn't have so much institutional power as they do now. You know, now feminists are basically like holding universities hostage. They figured out a way to fucking, you know, like, bring the show down, like they if they want to. So it's a different thing, you know. Back then it was just like those were just theories. Now those theories have grown to their final form, and those theories are now really oppressive. And so it was a different era. For me, in terms of Jordan B. Peterson, I have a lot of experience with genderqueer people, or people who say that they're genderqueer, trans trenders, as we call them. And you know, people, you know, some fucking girl who is really just a straight girl, ultimately she's just a fucking heterosexual girl, she all of a sudden claims to be non-binary and pansexual and starts trying to order gay guys around and trying to tell gay guys how to be queer. Like, that shit happens all the time. So, you know, when I hear that there's a law, that there's a super smart professor that is objecting to a law about gender pronouns, my ears perk up, because I'm like, oh, I know what those people are like. They are fucked up. They have tried to fuck, you know, I've repeatedly experienced in gay male spaces, these genderqueer people who are really just feminists. That, like, most genderqueer people, or supposedly genderqueer, you know, there's trans people. They are a very few minority. Like, it's very rare when somebody actually transitions, because it's hard. You have to, you know, it's a very hard thing to do. You have to really commit to taking hormones, you know, for a long time and changing your body.
Saying these are heterosexual women just kind of doing it for the identity. They're not lesbian. They're not transgender. They just say they're, like, pansexual.
Yeah, usually. That's usually what it is. There's some guys that do it too, but they're usually just feminine, effeminate gay guys that can't get dates. So they're kind of bitter, and they want to be like, you know why? It's because you don't understand my gender. I'm non-binary, and you're just a masculine cis gay man. And I sound very gay, but I'm actually very masculine looking.
As I was looking at your Facebook profile, and I was saying, like, your physical appearance doesn't go with your voice.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about that. I don't know what to say about that. It also depends on my mood. I think it depends on my mood too. Like, when I'm at a bar or something and I'm getting drunk, I get a little bit more like, I don't know. I'm a theater guy. If you watch enough of my videos, you know the way that my voice goes up and down very much, and I, like, you know, I have a lot of dramaticness in it. But when I'm just sitting around the house, I sound faggy. I don't know what to say. there'll be these, like, supposedly genderqueer gay guys. And it turns out, like, you know, you talk to them long, you know, like, they're like, you don't understand my gender, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I do. Like, you're a femme guy. And no, I'm non-binary. I'm sort of a woman and sort of a guy. And it's like, yeah, but are you transitioning? No. And it's like, well, yeah, okay, deep down, I feel kind of like sort of a woman, too. I think every gay guy does. Like, well, you don't look like it. And it's like, yeah, well, I'm not, you know, like, anorexic and shave, you know, like, I'm kind of a bear, but if I was really skinny and I did shave and I did color my hair pink, maybe I would look kind of girly. Like, I you know, and then it turns out, after you talk to them long enough,
Pilly, remember you were talking about in our last show, like, about that about About like the bear and the twink. What was like?
No, I was just thinking because I think there's absolutely nothing wrong if you're like masculine and masculine and just a man. I kind of like that. I mean, it's just like,
Do you want to know what it is? Is that the reason that they're pulling this whole genderqueer bullshit is that they can't get dates because they're too girly.
You're right. It's funny, and
because
that's,
gay guys want to date generally. Want to date masculine, unless you're like really fucking cute. Gay guys want to date masculine
that's
men.
That's cute, but it's
and so these guys, instead of just admitting the fact that they're too girly to get dates, and like maybe they should try, you know, like eating a few cheeseburgers and like not like shaving their chest or something, you know, like they instead say that they're non-binary, and then they basically blame the whole world for not accepting their gender, when really it's just like, dude, you know, like I was a skinny kind of twinky teenager too once upon a time, and you know, you grow older, you get used to it. It's your own deal. You cannot blame the rest of the world for people not being attracted to you, bottom line.
I think so. It's like, what if they're just sexually jealous? Like they kind of like the normal healthy masculine man. They're just afraid.
Oh, they all do.
It's like, oh, no, I hate you. Oh, and then they think about it.
They're just mad that you won't date them. They all would love to date like a hot like masculine dude. Mm-hmm. Like I'm trying to think of an actor like Hugh Jackman or something. Mm-hmm. They would all date him. Oh, please, you know, the guy who plays Wolverine.
I just don't understand why they're so hostile, have to make up theories about hating on just a strong normative person that's healthy.
That's what feminists do too. You know, mm-hmm. Feminists do the same thing.
Fat acceptance.
Well, one thing you've been saying is that traditionally it's been that a cisgender homosexual white males were basically like the main core group in the queer movement since like the beginning, but now that someone who's say a homosexual cisgender white male, they have a much lower status in this SJW culture.
We are public enemy number one. They fucking hate
you
us.
Have to be like a transgendered person of color.
No, okay, so here's the thing. The left, you know, the regressive left, the bad left, they will simultaneously pretend to speak for absolutely everybody that could be possibly considered a minority. But, and that's what they do and that's like their public persona. And they say that when they speak to the right, they're like, you are bad, you're homophobic, blah, 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 blah. But then as soon as they're talking to people who are leftists, they're like, you're a cisgender gay man. That means you have male privilege. That means that you're even more misogynistic than straight men. And by the way, all homophobia is rooted in misogyny. And it's like, and they say all of those things. And it's like, wait, just for the record, if gay men are even more misogynistic than straight men sometimes, and all homophobia is rooted in misogyny, that would mean that those gay men are even more homophobic than straight men.
One thing that I have sort of noticed lately is that feminists do tend to sort of try to play the oppression Olympics and try to make gay men out to be privileged. For example, I remember reading this one article on the Good Men Project called Gay Men's Sexism in Women's Bodies. Stuff along those lines about how gays, just like straight men, don't respect women's bodies.
Oh, no. They've taken that.
Are you talking about the one they're claiming homosexual men want to rape women?
They do, though. They do say that. And that's one of the big reasons I started making videos, was I was like, oh, my God, this has gotten mad. Like, this has gotten absolutely insane. They say that gay men frequently sexually assault and even rape women, and that they, like, get away with it or something. And they cite these – and it's all just rumor. There has never – and I mean, okay, but granted, part of their claim is that gay men get away with it because they're gay, so we don't even know if this has ever really happened. So, there's never a single reported incident of, like, some gay man who's, like, actually done this. It's all just – you know, just it's just hearsay. And supposedly it's that women go to gay bars and gay men don't like that women are in the bars. And so they exercise patriarchal control by touching the woman's body. They start slapping, they slap her ass and they grab her boobs out without her consent and blah, blah, blah. Okay, that is just not true. It is not true at all. I have taken.
And let me just also say this, because normally when members of a privileged group go into another group's space, isn't that deemed appropriation or imposing your privileged identity?
I don't know if it's not necessarily deemed. No, we don't think of it like that. It's more kind of like, hey, this is one of the only gay bars we have in the city. Don't fill it up with fucking straight girls.
Well, I guess the point I'm trying to make is that I guess the point I'm trying to make is that the left can be a little hypocritical in this regard, because normally when members of a group they deem privileged intrudes on another group's space, that they're saying, hey, you're privileged, let these people have their space.
Yeah,
and I guess when gays are hostile to straight women, it's another story.
That's true.
Cultural appropriation thing, it's kind of a divide on the left. Like, you have SJWs who are constantly complaining about it, but that's always been a major factor of white liberals as they've tried to adopt other subgroups. Yeah. Like other minority groups or the women going to gay bars.
They want to like adopt everybody to be a part of them so that they can speak for them. But then simultaneously there's been this, I think what really happened, and this is like my conspiracy theory that, you know, we'll see if this is true or not. What happened was the left was actually very unified and it was good at doing things. And, you know, the left was quite strong during, certainly for the first 4 years of the Obama term. Then it all started going undone. And I think it was because they wanted to put Hillary Clinton into office. And they've been planning on doing that for forever, you know. And but Hillary Clinton is like the most crooked Wall Street awful candidate ever. And so they figured the only way that they could do that was by obviously – there's no good reason for leftist people. You know, this is where the alt-left came from. The alt-left people, we realize that there is no good reason at all to put Hillary Clinton anybody like Hillary Clinton into office.
Absolutely. And would you say that the SJWs vastly preferred Hillary to Bernie?
No, they didn't, but the propagandists in the SJW – okay, and keep in mind – fourth SJWs is just a manifestation of fourth wave intersectional feminism, or we can call it just fourth wave feminism. Fourth wave feminism is the string that ties the regressive left together. And here's how it works. It's everybody who had any sort of sense of actual politics, which granted on the left is almost nobody. That's really only like 5% of people. You know, most people who are leftists, it's purely cultural. It's tribalism. But anybody who had any really good sense about leftist politics and like what people actually stand for, how to get a leftist president elected, we knew that Sanders was our only shot. We all knew that. We were smart enough to realize that. And that's why we advocated for him so hard. But here's where Hillary Clinton was able to she didn't even outmaneuver Sanders. She stole the election from him anyways, but this is what she tried to do and failed. I believe that this fourth wave intersectional feminism. So you guys know what intersectional feminism means, right?
Well, I'm familiar with concepts of intersectionality. Basically, in other words, you know, you can be privileged in various different ways, but also oppressed in different ways. So let's say you're gay white man, then you suffer from homophobia, but you still have white privilege and male privilege, and so basically you have to take all identities into account.
It's a form of trickery. It's trying to pretend to account for individual struggles of people based on their various forms of oppression by making sweeping generalizations. Like it actually all that intersectionality really does is turn individuals into a sum of generalizations, as opposed to really looking at, okay, so now keep in mind intersectionality, if you were to look at it in its most pure form, it's not a super bad concept. It's actually just common sense. It's like, yeah, of course, anybody who has an advantage or disadvantage, that would, you know, that is the sum of who they are, and that should be looked at accordingly. However, intersectionality is not intersectionality. It is intersectional feminism. That means that it unanimously places every female of any type or every feminine identified person, you know, including like effeminate gay guy as opposed to a masculine gay guy, those people are supposedly under this philosophy at a unanimous disadvantage. So you intersect, and that's where the Black Lives Matter movement came from. The people who founded the Black Lives Matter movement were intersectional feminists. They were three queer Black women. If you go on their website, it does not say our history, it says our herstory. And they were trying to, you know, demand all the credit for this movement. This movement, which actually should be led by Black men, because it is a movement to benefit Black men. And then when they got Black men involved, they were like these pathetic, like DeRay McKesson, who's like
Don King.
I don't remember Don King getting involved.
Sean King was one of their standard bearers.
Sean King, yeah, who's just like, oh, he's so pathetic. And DeRay McKesson, who's like totally gay and like a feminist and everything, you know, everybody who was involved in it was a feminist, which is one of the reasons why Black Lives Matter failed, because they had no sort of decent leadership. It was this very flimsy leadership coming from career activist feminists. And then all of a sudden they created a monster, and now there's people getting beat and killed, you know? I'm convinced, and this is a conspiracy theory, this is tinfoil hat, but I really am convinced that the reason why intersectional feminism became the trending, it became the tyranny of the left. It was the main tool of the regressive left over the past couple of years. And I think it's because the main beneficiary for that is, you know, all intersectional feminism does is basically say feminism or a woman is going to be the one that's going to solve all the world's problems. And that's basically what it does. It's like saying, yeah, you know, intersectionality means that we're looking out for everybody, but it's intersectional feminism, which means feminism, and Hillary Clinton, feminist, you know, and it was just like some sort of marketing strategy, and it failed.
Well,
so
didn't they even go as far as to say, as like Bernie supporters were misogynists, like the Bernie bro thing?
Oh yeah, and they invented that. That was a pure fabrication. That's another reason why I came up with this theory. That was actually sort of the thing that really got me into it, because I was a very early and very vocal Sanders supporter, and they started calling me a misogynist and a racist for it. Like it was insane. It was madness. So you know, they created this monster with identity politics. They lost control of it. You know, a lot of the people that were these regressives ended up siding with Sanders just simply because of, you know, things like his civil rights history and stuff like that. They were like, oh, he marched with Martin Luther King, we should like him. They didn't like him for the right reasons. So a lot of people, you know, who are alt-right or anti-SJWs, they make fun of Sanders a lot, but they don't understand the true appeal of Sanders to
people. Bay Area guy, you came out as like the only individual on the alt-right to publicly endorse Bernie Sanders.
Correct. And around that time, I was moving more and more in the direction of progressive economics, focusing a little more on political economy as opposed to race or alt-right topics. I mean, I still cover those occasionally. But one thing I was going to mention is that I long thought that a lot of this critical theory actually derives from critical race theory as opposed to intersectional feminism, because I know that critical race theory was all the rage in the academy starting in the 80s, and that I feel like a lot of that has bled over into other forms of identity.
Intersectional feminist, think about feminist theory, and it's like the blob. It's like a giant amoeba that sucks everything in to it and tries to, I think that it's hard to, I mean, there's been so much money pumped into feminism over the past 4 years. I mean, you know, Amy Schumer, Lena Dunham, Ghostbusters, these were not accidents. These didn't just happen because feminism was cool. those were made to happen, and those were the things that made feminism sort of cool. It's not cool anymore. It's clearly run its course. Keep in mind with the race theory, those things definitely were in the 80s. I think they started around the same time as feminist theory, gender studies departments. And I encountered some race theory cults in the 90s. My mom made me do this undoing racism seminar, which was really it was really just code word for blame all of the world's problems on white people and shame the white people in the group while, you know, trying to get everybody to perpetuate the cult. That's all it was. And but the feminists ended up taking that in, and now they control that, which is why you look at Uhuru, Gazi Kotso's organization.
Mm-hmm. Never really heard of it.
Oh, okay. Uhuru is this, it's a cult. It's a African People's Socialist Party, blah, whatever the fuck they call it. It's a cult. It's basically, it's a black supremacist movement. And, and they guilt people into being a part of it. They offer black people this idea that that black people are going to be the new oppressor class. Like, because they deserve it. And they refer to people like white people as like melanin deficient and shit like that. Like they're really, really bad news. They're awful.
Sounds like science fiction.
Yeah. It's really terrible. But back in the day, I had a friend that, is an Asian girl, and she got mixed up with them. They simultaneously, they were able to get under her skin in terms of her insecurities about white people because she's Asian, you know, and be like, mm-hmm. Yeah, haven't you noticed that white people treat you so bad? Yeah, yeah. And she's kind of – she refers to herself now these days as someone who was always kind of a pushover. So she was always – she would be like, yeah, I guess that's true. And then they would be like, yeah, but you also have privilege because you're not black. So you should really – you should –
intersectionality at its finest.
Yeah, yeah, no, and so they would, you know, they would get under her skin in two ways, and then she got guilted into doing all this work for them because she's actually a very competent person. So she was always busy with them, and they were always like calling her, and like when I would hang out with her, and they every time they talk on the phone, they begin the conversation with like a Kwavi, and then at the end of the conversation they say Uhuru, because they're a fucking cult. Like they really are a cult. And
that's one of the things that really ruined Occupy Wall Street. And
yeah,
what happened is they had the whole like progressive stack where they had if you were a woman of color, you spoke first. If you're a white male, you spoke last.
Yeah.
And that movement originally was supposed to be like an economic movement, and SJWs basically they turned it into a joke.
Right. No, I've talked about
and in many ways
lot.
The same thing also happened to the anti-war movement, because on Robert Lindsay's blog he once posted the quote by a gay man in the 70s who was an anti-Vietnam War activist, and he said something very interesting. He said that originally the goal was to oppose the war in Vietnam, but then you had all these liberals saying that, oh well, there aren't enough women or non-white people involved in this movement, and we need more diversity. And so the speaker concluded by saying that, you know, we're focusing all this energy on adding more diversity rather than actually stopping the war in Asia.
I'm sorry. I was just saying that it's funny because this whole thing where it seems to me that the left is so ruined is because it seems like everybody then goes back to nationalism, which seems to be far right, but under a left-wing system. I was just putting up that of just interest. It sounds so strange because it seems like Black Lives Matter should be the system benefiting blacks, but really it's turning to a black nationalist party under like the liberal regime, and it sounds so crazy, but it's actually happening.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. What I've been, you know, one of the things I warn people of. Okay, we were talking about the Occupy movement, and that's a very important thing to keep in mind for what I feel happened. The Occupy movement actually really scared the establishment. It scared everybody that has anything invested in terms of Wall Street and politics, and those people are often one and the same. And I kind of think that either the progressive stack, you know, the Oppression Olympics, either that, maybe that happened organically. It totally might have. Maybe, you know, maybe those people just started doing that because they were idiots.
There was an organization called Adbusters that was involved with Occupy Wall Street, and they were financed by Soros.
Oh, okay. No, so probably was infiltration then, because I've suspected that okay. Occupy scared people, and they infiltrated it with identity politics, and then they basically replaced it with Black Lives Matter. They did that to divide the left, because the left was actually getting too powerful, and they were starting to figure out the system, and they were starting to educate the masses about the system. So, yeah.
Well, they were doing that thing where they were rioting and attacking Trump supporters and trying to blame Bernie Sanders supporters, even though that the Clinton campaign was behind that group, or Soros was behind that group.
Oh yeah, totally. Soros seems to be the mastermind of just disempowering the left. And I almost wonder if I've also heard rumors that he actually donated $160 million to Trump. So he might have just totally used Hillary Clinton because he knew she was going to lose, and also maybe disempowered Sanders because Sanders was a legitimate threat. That's just a theory. I don't know.
It's funny because you mentioned of your Asian girl friend that you had, and blacks were basically saying, well, you have privilege. There was an interview on, I think, the Gavin McInnes show with Jared Taylor and the Rugman. And the Rugman, he's kind of like this white rapper who thinks he's black. He basically argues against Jared, saying, hey, look, you white people and Asians are actually the threat of the whole world. So now it seems to me that it's not just talking about white people anymore as a uniform. It's now putting Asians in that category as if.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And that's very interesting because here in the Bay Area, in Silicon Valley, a common lament is that there aren't enough minorities in tech and that people of color are underrepresented.
And it's like, and clearly you're ignoring Asian people. Clearly Asian people don't count.
If anything, white people are underrepresented in tech if you're going by the overall population of the United States. And yet Asians are somehow don't count as diverse because it would erode the left's narrative regarding white privilege.
Actually, there was a funny there was a blog that was actually quite funny called Stuff White People Like. And they had the entry on San Francisco was quite funny. It was like white people love San Francisco. It has what white people it has ideal diversity, which means straight, gay, and Asian.
No, Asian girls is like, number 11.
Kind of like Pill Eater's Asian Aryanism.
It's funny because in Stuff White People Like, there's very typical things from Asian girls to Japan and anime, plaid shirts, acoustic covers of rap songs. I love Christopher Lander's work. It's just so hits hard to what white people, even the Obama description. White people only like Obama just so because they won't be called racist. It's almost silly. And so, like Robert was saying about the whole Asian Aryan thing, I kind of refer to as, all right, if whites and Asians are going to be discriminated against, they're just going to join this force and be the most hated thing of all time, Asian Aryans or something.
It's really frustrating though, because okay, so like I know a lot of people who live, you know, I know a ton of SJWs. I was a theater and musician type. So SJWs, a lot of people who are like, they think that they're cool. SJWism became like the cool thing over, you know, 2013 through 2015. And then 2016 is when it stopped being cool. And now they're all like, 2016 is the worst year ever. And it's like, nope, that was 2015. And you're just feeling it now, you know? And the thing is, like, there's all these people that I know who are like Asian SJWs, and they are relentlessly like, they're still trying to like hold on to the last burning embers and, you know, like talk trash about white people and stuff. And I'm like, you guys need to give it up, because it's seriously like you guys like
I know like three friends who are like that.
Well,
like Asian.
Before you guys, didn't you mention your co-blogger Dota is from India, and he's like pointed out many times in his blog that like South Asians in the United States are like from a privileged class.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just look at the kinds of immigrants who come from India to the U.S. They're predominantly upper caste, high IQ. And that's just sort of funny looking at Asians behave like SJWs, because if you look at Asian countries themselves, they are thoroughly conservative and majoritarian nationalistic countries. So watching Asians put on that act, it's
they try to pretend to be down. Like they're like over the past. Okay, so this is one of the things. Another theory. I think that. This was a losing strategy, clearly. And I almost wonder, was this set up to be a losing strategy? The term people of color, just that term itself, because first of all, it's racist. It's just racist.
It was originally colored was a derogatory term, and now it's been transformed into the PC term.
It's more diabolical than that, because colored was a derogatory term for black people. It was not, and it did not include Asian people or, you know, Native Americans or Latino people. It was for black people. That was what colored meant. But eventually they decided that they needed a phrase, like a term, to basically call everybody who wasn't white, and non-white wasn't good enough, because that's describing oneself based on what they're not, as opposed to, you know, the majority. And so they started doing this thing, and I have lots of friends, a lot of Asian friends, you know, for example, and my oldest friend in the world is mixed. He's like half Filipino and then maybe like an eighth Native American or something, and then the rest white. But he looks totally Asian. Like, he, you know, you barely see that he's white. And
I just wanted to butt in for a second. I think it's funny that we're talking about Asians and social justice warriors. I actually have a nice girlfriend I know at I've met like last semester. She has like blue hair. She's Chinese, and she's got like one tattoo, and she's all for this like whole social justice cause about like how white men are patriarchal and all this silly stuff. But then all of a sudden, like the whole talking about how these people, they actually, you know, hate the white cisgender when actually they're in love. And sooner or later, this girl I know actually started talking to me out of nowhere. And then actually we became in a relationship, and she's like the best person ever. And it's just funny because it has nothing to do with politics or whatever. She approached me, and I basically represent everything that she hates. And it's like, it doesn't, you know, I'm saying there's something really crazy or something really.
Well, you know, this is the thing. And I think that this is, I'm actually getting to what you're talking about. My friend that I've known, he's a gay guy and he's Asian. I've known him since the fourth grade, and I'm like, we were in the fourth grade class together, and I'm 34 and we're still friends. And he, over the course of my life, has shown me how easy it is for Asian people to, when it's convenient, fit in with the white people. And when it's convenient to fit in with, you know, anyone who's not white, they do that too. They're like, oh yeah, we're all people of color. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then when it's all white people around, they don't have a problem with that. They're like, yeah, I'm an Asian guy, I can hang out with white people, you know, like, and
Bay Area guy, didn't you write about that topic once, about how this whole kind of a concept of a coalition of people of color is starting to break down?
Oh, yeah. And it was never very strong to begin with, because really, what does an affluent Asian techie have in common with a poor black man in the ghetto at the end of the day?
Yeah, absolutely.
And ultimately, aside from common loathing for straight white men to the extent that it exists, there's nothing that really binds these groups together.
There is one thing. It's harder to date on Tinder. Exactly what you're saying. And these Asian people that are still clinging to this people of color like identity, and they're talking shit about white people, it's just really sad, because what they should be doing is trying to reunite with their white friends, as opposed to holding on to this belief that, like, you know, by the year 2050, white people are going to be in the minority, so as long as I'm down with black people, we'll win or something. You know, it's like,
You were talking about kind of on one of your previous videos, like in the alt-right, they have this whole kind of like white genocide meme, but then you have all these SJWs put out these videos like openly celebrating white people are going to be a minority by the year 2050, so racism's going to go away. So they're kind of like, in a sense, they're...
They're encouraging it. They're giving the alt-right justification for believing in white genocide, because they talk about it. They basically are like celebrating, like, you know, it's like, okay, I can see where the alt-right people are coming from, because you do sound an awful lot like that. Sargon makes that
right.
point.
And here's the thing. A lot of people who think that this new multiracial utopia where no one group is a majority, those who think that this is going to usher in racial harmony are deluded, because as Dota has told me on many occasions, you just have to look at the politics of these diverse free-for-all countries such as India or other parts of South Asia or Southeast Asia, where politics
even,
basically just becomes
like,
a racial headcount.
Or even like Latin America is a good example.
I have to say something. It's funny because what Prince just said about how, Asian SJW should get on the white side. I think that's actually happening right now, and it's happening.
I think it is.
And here's the thing.
I just want to clarify. Yeah. I don't want people to make it sound like that's what I want. I just think that like it would be a better strategy for them as individuals.
That's what I want. That's what I'm saying. And but my made-up ideology I call Asian Aryanism, what I see and what I've experienced is nothing but white male, Asian female, or Asian male, white female couples everywhere in major city areas. Everyone knows it's there, but everyone's naive or ignorant about it, or they're afraid to talk about it. And I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a unity among these people, and then they're going to be the hated class as the new, but they're not white because they're going to have half a kids. And so like, it's going to become this strange, like they can't be white because they deny white racial content because of the media, and Asians go for whites is because it's high social status. So what in America, we're now going to witness this upper class, middle, hipster, Asian, white, hap, you know, white male, Asian, female safe space.
I see it all the time. Like, granted, I'm obsessed with Asian noodle soups, so I go and eat ramen and fucking pho all the time. But I live in Seattle currently, and there's tons of interracial couples with kids, like little mixed Asian white babies all the time, everywhere.
That's the thing, because it's like, if white Americans had a choice in a multicultural and diverse society, instead of having to choose all the races, you know, black, Asian, Mexican, whatever, I think always white males choose Asian women when given that chance, and they'll only advocate for multiculturalism and diversity just to arrogantly choose and discriminate for Asian women. And that's a phenomenon that's not really talked about. I'm serious. I talked about
You're basically saying that if it weren't for Asian women, whites would just completely abandon the multicultural experiment?
In some radical sense, that might be unfortunately true, but it looks like that's why, I'm assuming you're right, Bay Area.
Statistically, we know that's somewhat true, because there's data from searches on, app dating, you know, like Tinder and shit like that. And the most commonly searched for women are Asian women, and the most commonly searched for men are white men. So
do you see the same dynamics like on a site like Grindr?
Grindr is, I would say, like, I mean, I don't really. I think so. I think it's mostly just worked for. It's mostly white men. Like, I think the gay male community is very white male centric, and Latino guys.
I've noticed a change in that, because I remember around the time I was in high school in the early 2000s, gay culture was totally white dominated, and like Mexican American kids in my high school were into this like thug culture, and they were making homophobic slurs like faggot all the time. But I've noticed a trend where you're seeing more Latinos in a gay culture.
Definitely. There's a lot of, I would say so. I don't know what to attribute it to necessarily, but there's definitely lots of bearded Latino guys. Like Latino bears are very popular, so.
I also see it kind of coinciding with like a hipster culture, because I think like back then, like the late 90s, early 2000s, like the gangster culture was dominant. But when the hipster culture entered the mainstream, more Latinos got into the hipster culture. I think that could be part of it too.
Yeah, sure.
I was just about to say, from, you know, my sexuality, going back on the whole racial thing, it's like, you know these things, but it's like, you know, sexuality is so complex and stuff. Like, you would think, like, things happen naturally in a multicultural society where it's like, all right, whites be with whites, blacks be with blacks, you know, Asian with Asian. Like, for me, you know, when being in, like, high school and college, you know, it's funny because I was kind of in denial that I actually liked Asian girls, because I always pretended that everyone was the same individual and that, you know, there was no race with the human race. And eventually I didn't even come to the racial answer that I thought Asian girls are better than white girls until just like,
well, if you like asked a lot of those couples and pointed out like the dynamics, a lot of those guys, I think you referred to them as, I forget the word, some kind of a cuck. They say like they
well,
prefer Asian women, but if you ask them that, they say, no, that's racist. I like all women.
Yeah, well, that's just a terminology I made up. Like, the alt-right calls you a cuck if you work against the white race. Well, I'm going to make up a term where, all right, if you have an Asian wife and you have Asian children, you chose that and discriminated at. And it's like, you're a cuck, a new cuck, if you don't be proud in that. And so that's why, in terms of Asian Aryanism, I would call it new cuck for that. And that's what I think I went through, a form of new cuckery myself with the whole, cause like the thing is, when I dated, like, I remember dating like 2-3 white girls in my whole lifetime. And every time it was so bad and horrible, I thought to myself, oh, she's just a rotten girl. I'll meet the best girl and she'll even be better. But then I would dump it. I would keep bouncing into Asians and pretend nothing. They were just like white. And it wasn't until after like sexual encounters and amazing experiences did I like last year realize, I like, oh my god, I love Asian women. And so I don't know, it's just something about sexuality.
We are at the end of the show. I would like to thank Prince of Queens for being on.
Hi, yeah, thanks for having me. And yeah, anybody who's interested in my YouTube channel, it is Prince of Queens. YouTube actually just today started deleting a bunch of channels. People think it was an accident, but we don't know if it might be a trend. So hopefully I'm still around.
And we're going to be back for a second segment where we'll talk more about the alt-left and about economic issues.